everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two things are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as audio and video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA as well as their outstanding yearly conference, please go to pnwa.org. Well, if metafiction is fiction about fiction writing, then I think today's show is sort of a meta show, because my two guests today, R. Jeffries and Melissa Studdard, are both writers in their own right. R. Jeffries, a poet, playwright, editor, and Melissa is a novelist, essayist, poet, but it just so happens, like me, they are also both broadcasters. Jeffrey is the host of The Right Step, and Melissa hosts Tiferet Talks, both of them on the internet. And so today, we are going to talk, I guess, about talking about writing. So let's get to it. Welcome to Author, you guys.
Welcome, Bill. Thank you.
Hi.
Hello. Well, listen, before we get going with this, Melissa, why don't you first tell our listeners, if they aren't familiar with it already, about Tiferet Talks, where they can find it and what it's all about?
Oh, great. Sure. Tiferet Talk is also a blog talk radio show, and it's through the Tiferet Journal. It's a literary journal that is of it's a spiritual literary journal. And we interview writers that, like poets, people who are focused primarily on literature, but we also interview writers about writing. I've interviewed Julia Cameron and people like that, and also writers who write nonfiction spiritual books. And it's easy to find. If you type in the word Tiferet, the first thing that will pop up is Tiferet Journal on the internet.
Yeah, I was calling it Tiferet. I knew I'd get it wrong.
Well,
Tiferet. T-I-F-E-R-E-T.
No, that's actually another correct pronunciation.
Oh, good. Thank you.
No worries.
All right, and Jeff, what about The Right Step? You've been doing that for a little while.
Yeah, it's going on 4 years now, Bill. I started
wow.
with Red Rivers Writers Network. I'm still affiliated with them, but I kind of stepped away because I really wanted to have my show, to be very blunt. I wanted to have not just writers and also be able to have as many poets as I possibly could have on my show, but people in entertainment. I've had Hollywood movie stars and just a lot of really good friends.
Yeah.
You know, anybody that's sort of, very involved in the arts in general, some movers and shakers, some people just getting started, just have a place where people could come in my little virtual living room and sit and talk about their craft and get to know them as well. I like people to feel like they really are in my living room. And we're just getting to know each other even better. And I've been so blessed to have you as my guest, as well as Melissa, both two of my favorite shows.
Well, that is great. I love the analogy of it being like your living room. I whenever I do my interviews, whether it's on Author to Author like this or the video ones that I do for Author Magazine, I try to view the time I have with the authors, which is often relatively brief in terms of the whole span of my life, as if I'm making a friend. And if the interview has gone well, I do come away feeling as if I have kind of made a friend. Do you ever feel that way about it, Melissa? How do you approach it?
Absolutely. I begin the interviewing process by learning as much as I can about the person, and that goes beyond reading their work. I study anything that they're interested in. So by the time they come on to be interviewed, I already feel like they're a friend. And then, as you said, if it goes well, and there's a connection, and we all know what that feels like when you're talking to someone, and you know, you're really understanding what they're saying and connecting and bantering back and forth and laughing and having fun, then it always feels like you've made a friend afterwards.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you guys feel this way. Jeff, maybe you could comment on this. One of the lessons I had to learn about interviewing, and I learned this through trial and error, is that for me, while I do research on the person and want to learn about particularly their lives and as well as their work, I am always better if I come to the interview with no preconceived notion of what I'm going to talk about, that I have to let them show me what is sort of meant to be talked about on that day. Do you do that, or do you like to prepare your questions ahead of time?
It's unusual. We all have different processes, but I think what we do, and we've talked about this, you and I as well, and Melissa, you and I have talked about this, staying in the moment, that's a rarefied moment you get to have, a real gift. So staying in that moment with them. But I'm a little bit, I'm probably so anal, I suck up all the furniture in my room when I sit down about preparing. Me, it's really about preparing. I send a packet out to my guest. I send out a guest questionnaire. So if there's anything that haven't been asked and wanted to be asked before in interviews, they have that opportunity. But also work out of that box as well. Yeah. You know, allow it. If we get on another tangent and we stay there for the show, so be it. That's the moment. That's what it should be.
Right.
And that's when everybody's the most comfortable.
Right.
But I
what
like to be
you?
Really, really prepared.
And how about you, Melissa? Do you like to have a whole list of questions, or do you dive in? How do you, or something in between?
Well, you know, this is a really great question. And in the beginning, when I first started doing it, I did want to have a lot of questions. And I felt like if I didn't have enough questions to talk to them for 2 hours for a one-hour interview, you know, I felt a little nervous, like, oh, what if we run out of things to talk about? But as time went on and I got used to the process, I found that actually being really in the moment was the best way to go because, as you said, a lot of times the interviewee has something that's on their mind, and no matter how much you've researched them, you can't be aware of what they're thinking about and really wanting to talk about and what needs to surface at that moment other than going through the process with them and talking to them and just being very present with them. So I think I'm probably in the middle of you two guys on that.
You know what it reminds me of is the sort of the process of creating a character if you're writing fiction, which is that you have, at least for me, when I was doing more fiction writing, you have the image of the character in your head, which is not unlike a person you've just researched that you're going to talk to. And then you meet the character on the page. And it's always, for me, there's always a difference between the sort of first impression I have and then when I hear them, I'm talking about a fictional character now, speak to me. And the same is true of the people I interview. I have a kind of preconceived notion based on maybe even interviews I've seen of them, but then I meet them in person, or even on the phone like this, because I can tell a lot from someone's voice over the phone, and it's always different. There's a subtlety there that I just can never get in my imagination before I'm actually there with them. Have you ever had that experience, Jeff, where it's changed for you once you're there on the phone with the person?
And very much so, and that's why first and foremost for me is to make sure that the guest is completely comfortable at ease.
Yeah.
You know, and when they're and we're in that moment together and we're comfortable and relaxed, you always tangent. Something else will come up. They'll say something that will sort of inspire me. I'll say, well, you know, didn't really look at it from that perspective, and we'll discuss that. Yeah, I'm finding myself becoming, as long as I'm really prepared to start with, I feel like then I have the flexibility to let the show go wherever the show is going to be and wants to be.
Yeah. And you know, Melissa, I want to say, by the way, that I love Tiferet Journal. I love that they are addressing this sort of intersection of creativity and writing and spirituality. To me, it's a very natural intersection. It's something I try to address in my daily column for the magazine, and I try when possible on the show. Was that what drew you to it? Is that true of your own life that you address the relationship between creativity and spirituality?
Oh, absolutely. Creativity,
I mean, Julia Cameron
right.
is, of course, the sort of goddess of the intersection of those two things.
She really is, and would you believe she was my first interview?
Perfect.
I was so nervous, I thought I would die. I was like, oh, my gosh, I've never done an interview before. I know nothing
right.
about doing an interview, and here I am thrown in here with Julia Cameron. What am I going
right.
to do? But she was wonderful. She was so gracious. But yes, absolutely. That's something that I was interested in my own writing. And I was in in some places they have these sort of magazine stand stores. And I was in one of those in Colorado on vacation, and I found a copy of Tiferet Journal, and I started reading through it, and I thought, oh, my gosh, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, I think with writing, one of the most important things about getting our work out there is finding the right place for it.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, blindly submitting it wherever. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is a place that's publishing the kind of stuff that I'm writing. It's what I want to read. And
yep.
I just got really excited about it. And I started by submitting some of my own poems, which were accepted. And then from that point forward, my relationship with the magazine grew to the point that I actually became an editor and then started hosting the talk show.
Yeah. That's just awesome. And it's a great way to go about it, you know. I think that I was just reading, just actually this afternoon, I was reading Eckhart Tolle, and as he is wont to do, he was talking about the present moment and being present and the difference between letting your mind go to the past and the future. And I thought, so much of creativity and so much about writing and writing well and doing this sort of work that we're doing right now has to do with just showing up and being in this moment. Because even though when you're writing, your imagination might be taking you into other places, it really, no matter if you're writing about the past or imagining a future or like me doing some kind of memoir, it's still actually about really showing up and being absolutely present. Do you find that to be the case, Jeff?
I do, absolutely, Bill. And it's just, and also being able to connect with people who get us. And I think if you say that phrase to any other writer, they know exactly what you mean because they do get you. I mean, if we wrote down our job description and, interviewed someone for it, they would say, you do what? You sit down for how many hours a day making up things and then hope that someone possibly might want to read it, never mind, you know, publish it? You know, so we live in a very rarefied world, and be able to join with someone who gets that is just an amazing process. And then find, as Melissa said so well, someone who... a publisher like Minded or Tiferet, another wonderful organization, love them, that sort of get your work. How about, I can't think of a better symbiosis or a better gift to be able to join with that.
Right. Well, it's like Richard Bach said when I interviewed him for the first time, he said, you're not looking for an editor, you're not looking for a publisher, you're looking for a member of your intellectual family.
Okay.
And I think he's absolutely right about that, I have to say. And of course, and as a poet, Melissa, one of the reasons poetry was already really my first way, was really what taught me to write, was reading poetry and writing it. It taught me about economy, and it taught me about the power of going in deep quickly, because you don't have much time in the poem, and you've got to get to the heart of it. Even though it could be, you know, page long, you still, compared to a novel or short story, you've got to get in quickly. You got to get right to the soul, I think. And for me, poetry still remains probably the quickest route, I think.
You know,
it's so transferable, that skill set, Bill, to prose.
Yes, it can be. I try to transfer it to my prose, but it was poetry that taught me, I think.
And I think for all three of us, it was the same process for me. My very first love, and still is.
It's poetry. And was that the true for you, Melissa?
Oh, absolutely. And my MFA is in poetry, and I feel like my novel is what it is because I was a poet first. And I wanted to say also, it's so interesting to hear you say that, because having recently read some of your blogs, that's one of the things that I noticed, is how you can just so quickly and deeply go into the heart of what you're talking about, particularly the one that you had featured on the Tiferet recently. So,
the one about my cat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So to hear you talk about how poetry led you to that, it was just kind of eye-opening for me.
Well, you know what's interesting, Melissa? When I started doing these blogs about 4 years ago, so I do them 5 days a week, you know, give or take. And that's a lot of them, right? But
yeah.
I like to go deep. That's just, I'm happiest there. But I started realizing, and I want to bounce this back to you guys, but I started realizing 400 words, not a lot, but I started looking at them as poems. I mean, they weren't poems exactly, but that was how I viewed them. That was how I viewed them as successful, the same way I would view a successful poem. was I couldn't always rely. I had to rely on the poetic, the open-ended accuracy of a poem, if you know what I mean. The sort of the fertile open field that it can create within the reader's imagination that is unique, I think. Poems, I just don't have enough time to lay the whole thing out.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that's so interesting to me about what you're saying, too, is when I think about poetry in my book, I think about a certain kind of sensuality of language and a certain kind of texture, but you're saying something different, which is more about the way it's built and the way it's structured, and I see that. I never thought about it before with a short prose piece of writing, but it's such a great comparison about how you can learn to structure that and create that by having done a poem first. So what do you think about that, Jeff?
Same thing, because Bill and I actually commented on Facebook last week about what a great feeling when you stick that landing. And to me, the essence of a poem is you want to stick that landing. And again, transfer that to an essay I sit back and go, okay, Jeffrey, well done. You stuck the landing. Smooth, you know, came in, both wheels touched, and you came to a nice stop. Crash.
Yeah.
Gosh, I've never heard it phrased that way. That's really incredible.
Stick the landing. It's very important. You know, the ending, I think endings are so important. I spend most time on my last sentence, usually, of those blogs, because I feel that that's the gift I'm leaving you with. That's where I want you to land, and that's where I want you to stay. And I feel like when I read novels, the one place, if I have a complaint about novelists, it's when they give up on the ending. They just sort of let it die, as opposed to really taking that time with that last bit.
That sounds so sad.
I know. Well, they say, well, it's gone. It's over. The roller coaster ride's over. Goodbye. I'm tired.
If it's got an ellipse on the end, I don't mind if it really left me with something to think about, you know, and continue it in my own imagination. But, yeah, if it just trails off, rattles off into the, you know, other places, yeah, exactly. And I always am aware of that myself when I write.
Well, let me ask you this, both of you guys. So you both write, and now, and Melissa, when did you start doing Tiferet Talks? A year ago?
Actually, it's been about 2 years now.
2 years, okay, great. What I have found both doing this show and doing the interviews for Author, which I've been doing for about 4.5 years now, coming up on 5, incredibly educational, not to me as a writer, yeah, but also just as sort of a human being. What have you learned from doing the interviews? How has that changed maybe your writing or just your relationship to yourself? Melissa, you want to start with that one?
Sure, and that's another great question. It's been really phenomenal, actually, and it's true. As a writer and as a human being, it's been so impactful to me in so many ways. The people who I interview, I feel like they have so much knowledge and such an amazing way of expressing what they know. And most of them are so generous, too, with what they've learned through the writing process, sharing that. You know, it's been hard-earned for them, and yet they're willing to just sort of hand it over and say, here, this is what I learned. And I go back through, and I actually sometimes re-listen to the interviews or read over them and try to really, really firmly grasp some of the concepts. It's almost like being in a class, you know, learning these things. And the thing that's so incredible is you get to just, you know, read something and then ask the person. I mean, how many people would love to ask something of the author, you know, the books that they read, and then here we get to do it. So as far as writing, there's that. But also, as you said, it goes so often to a deeper level, and you talk about other things, about, especially in Tiferet Talk, and I've listened to some of your interviews, and of course, Jeffrey's, so both of you guys, too, that you get into another realm that may be spiritual or who knows what, and then you learn so much from that as well.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff? How has it altered, or what have you learned? How has it changed for you since you began doing the interviews?
I think it has so much to be able to feel, to be very blunt, on a very personal level, that it's okay to do what I do. You know, for many, many young writers especially, rewriting is always often perceived by others, especially family for some strange reason, as, wow, when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to ask this hobby?
Yeah.
And, you know, interviewing people like people that, to me, that I've been fans of their work for decades. Someone that first comes to mind is Edie Clark. I think she is our consummate American essayist. Mm-hmm. I adore her. And to be able to interview her and hear her process of what she's been through, where she's felt she stumbled, what she's learned, to be able to hold on to that, take her knowledge and what she's learned and be able to have her share that, I literally glow when I'm done with those interviews. And I walk away with that going, okay, it's okay to do what you're doing. This is a real job.
Yeah.
You know, it's making it can make a difference in the world. Obviously, a difference to you in your life, and other people are doing that process and have the same doubts and question the same things you do.
Yes. Now, see, this is very important. This is one of the reasons I created Author, and I was glad to see it validated in the interviews I did because I wanted a sense of community. And one of the first, and from the very early on, I've had so many wonderful interviews with all kinds of fabulous writers, and to have them talk about the unique challenge that is starting a book from nothing and then finishing it, and all the indecision that goes with it, and the unique kind of fear and the self-doubt and all the kinds of questions that a lot of beginning writers ask of themselves. Alice Hoffman asks it of himself. Andre Dubuque asks it of himself. Louis Sachar. All these writers who have won awards and published books, no, they're talking about the same challenges. They just have their balance on the balance beam of novel writing is just a little bit better, but they still have to keep their balance. And so that it was a huge gift to me, and I was so glad to be able to share it with all the viewers, and I hope that they were able to see it. And I would say the other thing that I learned that I have transferred again and again, not just to my writing, but to my life, is listening, that the power of listening, and that what a generous experience it is to listen to somebody, and how valuable it is to me, and how people light up when they're really listened to, how they come to life when they're really listened to. Have you guys had that experience?
Exactly, Bill. Can I just give you a quick anecdote? I was so lucky to interview Dr. Andrea Pollard. She worked on her book for 13 years. It's self-help for it's just about happiness. And what a great concept just as that, as it stands.
Right.
To be happy, find happiness. It's an East-West joining those two together, those two different philosophies, which seem disparate in many ways, but to put those together. And have her say something to me. She gave me such a gift about a few weeks ago. Got an email from her saying, you know, Jeff, I know we interviewed a number of months ago, but I found myself just the other day being interviewed by another interviewer, and all I could think about was, I wish this was Jeff. And I was, you know, those are those moments that make you melt.
It is nice to hear, isn't it? So, Melissa, do you like, do you feel it's strength? Maybe you were an excellent listener already.
No.
I feel like I could always, you know, writers, we like to talk. We like to write.
No.
We like to speak. Has it honed that skill of yours at all?
Oh, absolutely, without question. I feel that in order to, you know, like we were talking about earlier, know the direction that the person who you're interviewing wants to go in, you really have to listen deeply. And you know, one of the things for me in interviewing is that I try to remind myself and to know and to make it about the person who's being interviewed. My goal is to really to showcase them and to, you know, hope that they feel good and honored after the interview is done. So it's all about them, and it has to be about them, and that's what helped me to listen to them. And it's also about the listeners too, and trying to talk about things that I think would be of interest to them. So yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when I'm doing an interview, I will offer a point of view as a clue to the person I'm interviewing that we can go. Sometimes they don't know if it's comfortable for them to go a certain, say, spiritual direction. You know, they may not know if that's what the show is about. So I like to offer a perspective to see how they respond if I want to talk about death or I want to talk about God or whatever, and see how if they're willing to go there or not. And sometimes they're relieved and excited. Oh, good, it's one of those shows, you know, they really can dive for. Because sometimes that you do need to let them, you know, perhaps it's more obvious for Tiferet Journal because of the nature of the publication. But I always like to let them know we can go as far as you want to go. And the deeper in the fact, like when I interviewed Cheryl Strayed, it was that way. That was a great interview, and she just went for it from
she was marvelous. So that was an excellent interview. Can I ask both of you a question, if I may?
Yes.
Sure.
What do you do, and what's your process when you get, it's happened to all of us, I know that, you get a guest who just, no matter what you do or what tact or as open-ended as you possibly can be, you just cannot bring them into the moment with you. They are just literally, maybe it's just the nature of the business of writing, that you feel like they're just waiting for you to stop talking so they can just...
Well, that's a good question. How about you, Melissa? How do you handle it when they're just not responding to you? They're not being a part of real...
Well, you know, I sit there and I count the minutes. No, I'm just kidding. It has happened. I mean, and it's difficult when you're talking to someone who either doesn't really seem to want to be there, or they're giving you these pat answers that you've heard a million times on other interviews, and you feel like you're just not cracking it open and not getting in. And the only thing I can say is that I just keep trying to get deeper and more precise and more specific with the questions and hope that something will, you know, really make them want to talk and want to talk sincerely and openly. But it doesn't always happen. I mean, sometimes you get someone who just doesn't open up.
You know, and I find that if I'm really present, it doesn't happen. That the time I've gotten into trouble, and I don't mean this as a criticism of either of you guys, but for myself, I had interviews that start going sideways, but it's for me it was because I was not paying attention to them. I had an agenda that I thought was a good idea, but it was an agenda. And I remember when I started interviewing Sarah Vowell, it was just not going well, I didn't think. And then I stopped with the whole idea I had coming in, and I started listening very carefully to what she said, and I perceived at that point what I thought was actually of interest to her. And once we started going there, the complexion changed right away. And it was a huge lesson to me to, like, don't have your own ideas, Bill. Find out what's interesting, because everybody's interesting. I could interview a guy in the street. Somehow they're interesting, but you've got to listen. You know, really, you've got to listen. And God bless the ones like Richard Bach, where all I got to do is say hello and he could go, you know. But not every...
You know, this is so interesting. It's such a wonderful observation, and I think you're absolutely right.
About the listening,
And,
you know, and I've said it in my blogs, and I said it on the show, but I absolutely maintain that that writing is listening, that is a vibration of writing, that it is not thinking, that you have come to the page for a conversation, not a monologue. And the more I can remember that, the better my writing is, and the more I can remember for these shows, obviously, the better they are. How about you? On that note, I just heard a British bird in my ear letting me know that, unfortunately, this show is over already. I can't believe it.
Yeah,
Thank you so much for coming on.
I would be young, I'm not surprised this just flew by.
Wow.
Thank
what
you
a great
so-
show.
I'm the right step with Art Jeffries. That's WRITE. All you need to do is just put it in Google, and you can find my show there, and you can find me on everywhere. Right Step.
And Tiferet Talks, and of course, Google Melissa Stutter, and they can find out all about you on your webpage as well. It's a lovely webpage.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to speak with both of you.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having you on. And before we go, just let everybody know, remember, if you're listening to this live, it is Tuesday. It is Election Day. Go, go, go vote. Remember, your whole life is a choice, including who you vote for. So make the choice. Don't avoid it. Not voting, that's a choice, too. So make a choice for sure. Until then, I will be talking to somebody next week. I can't remember who. It doesn't matter. Do what you love. Choose what you love. And believe me, you really can't ever go wrong. Have a great day, everybody.